saw nothing wrong with it. It carries certain appeal, like a motivational slogan for the hardworking and committed. But I've come to realize there's a problem with it. The issue is, it's too inward focused. Let's take it apart. Work as if everything depends on you. Well, I'm responsible. I grind and I hustle. I give 110% in all that I do. And that all seems admirable if what I'm pursuing is actually right. But what if I'm wrong? Hard work by itself isn't enough. We also need directions. A person can be sincere, disciplined, and driven, and still be heading the wrong way. Remember Saul, who later became the Apostle Paul. He was committed. He had great work ethic, but he was heading entirely the wrong direction, persecuting the very people of God. His drive did not make him right. It just made him dangerous. Now consider the second part. Pray as if everything depends on God. Again, it sounds spiritual, but underneath there's something is off. Seems like the agenda has been set by us. Pray as if everything depends on God. The word as if. So quietly it's suggesting that really it's depending on us. We're just trying to make God to think he's in charge. You know, it starts to feel like God is the genie. If we prayed long and hard enough, he will answer our request. I think Jesus teaches us a completely different posture in the Lord's Prayer. Throughout the Bible, we see people praying, prophets, priests, kings, and ordinary people. Prayer itself was nothing new. Yet, in Luke 11, Jesus' disciples came to him with a simple yet profound request, as if they were children learning how to walk for the first time. They asked Jesus, "Lord, teach us to pray." Directly responding to the disciples' question, Jesus gave explicit instructions on how to pray, and what we now call the Lord's Prayer. In Matthew 6, the same prayer was taught to the crowd as part of the Sermon on the Mount. Interestingly, before Jesus taught people how to pray, he taught people how not to pray. "Do not be like the hypocrites, for they love to pray standing in the synagogues and on the street corners to be seen by others." Matthew 6, 5. Jesus used the great problem-solving method, inversion. The late Charlie Munger was a big fan of it. He told people when solving problems, either in life or in business, to invert. Always invert. If we learn what could lead to failure and avoid it, then we will be halfway to success. For example, when it comes to parenting, there's no one size fit all answer. However, if we probably all want our kids to grow up to be independent adults, whether it's in their spiritual journey or just life in general. Let's try to solve the problem by inverting the issue. Let's ask ourselves, how do we raise kids who are not independent? In other words, how do we make sure they are dependent? Suddenly the problem becomes very clear. Never let them make any decisions. I've realized that that's something I struggle with. What do you do when it's Alberta in the middle of the winter and they just want to put on a hoodie and go outside? Or one of my kids, if I let him, he'll spend all his money on candy. Yeah. I don't want them to make stupid mistakes and bad choices in life. So naturally, I step in and tell them exactly what to do. But as I'm learning, if I don't let them make any decisions, starting with small ones, they'll never learn how to do it. So I shouldn't be surprised when they're 40, I'll still be the one making decisions for them. Just the other day, one of my kids asked me if he could ride his scooter to school. Scooters are fun, but those things are not good for long distance. You kind of have to constantly pushing. Okay, so I thought it was too far for him to ride a scooter from our place to the school. So I told him that, but I said, I prefer you ride your bike. But he looked at me and said, but if I want to take the scooter, I can. And I was like, yes. And later I checked, and sure enough, the little turkey did take the scooter. I've come to realize that, come to see that that's a win. You know, he got to make a decision and come to see the result of it. And if he failed, if it was too much for him, at least he could see, you know, Dad had a point, and I was looking out for him. And if it was no problem for him, well then, good for him. He made a decision and took a risk and seen it pay off. Hooray for him. So back to the passage. Clearly, Jesus saw a major pitfall for us. Namely, we do things to impress others. And that's including when we pray. And Jesus cut right through all of that with this simple reminder. Do not be like them, for your Father knows what you need even before you ask him. God is not interested in the show. He does not see us putting on a performance. He already knows what we need. So directly speaking to the crowd, Jesus said, this then is how you should pray. Let's read it together or recite it, whatever you prefer. This then is how you should pray. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us today our daily bread, and forgive us our debts, as we also have forgiven our debtors. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Starting with verse 9. Our Father in heaven, hallowed be your name. Notice that first word, our Father. Not my Father, it's our Father. If we truly grasp that one word, I think many of our divisions would disappear. At home, so often the kids want to be with me at the same time. One sits on my lap, and the other one to squeeze in, and the third one want to jump in there somewhere. I want to say it's always cute, and sometimes it is, but more often it ends in chaos. Why? Because they don't want to share. It doesn't take long before the bickering starts. I was here first. You're pushing me. Each one want to claim that to be theirs and theirs alone. I think we're like that with God. We want to claim God for ourselves and to make him ours alone. When we do that, we put ourselves at the center of the relationship. But that's not how it meant to work. Jesus teaches us to begin prayer by recognizing who's really at the center of that relationship, God. Hallowed be your name. The word hallowed means holy, sacred, or worthy of deep respect. Let God's name be honored, not ours. This is the posture Jesus invites us into, a shared relationship with the Father, as children who are equal in his eyes. Being equal is enough. We don't need to compete for importance. And that requires a shift in our perspective. From us to him. Verse 10. Your kingdom come, your will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Once again, the focus stays on God, his kingdom, his will. Back in verse 8, Jesus reminds us that God really already knows what we need even before we ask him. So if prayer is not about asking God what we need, letting him know our desires, then what is it for? When we sincerely pray, your will be done, your kingdom come, we're doing more than just saying these words. We're surrendering. We're giving up the illusion that we're in control. Prayer then becomes less about trying to bend God's will to ours and more about letting him shape us into the people who live for his will. And then Jesus adds, on earth as it is in heaven. As followers of Christ, when our hearts become aligned with God, we become participants in his work, showing his love, extending his mercy, and being a light wherever he placed us, just like the lighthouse we were seeing earlier. That way, we help bring earth just a little bit closer to heaven. Give us today our daily bread. Daily bread represents our daily basic needs. And right here, Jesus teaches us something very important. We are ultimately dependent on God. That does not mean that we sit around, skip grocery shopping, and just waiting for manna to drop from the heaven. If we remember, God did provide manna for the Israelites. However, they had to go out and gather. As humans, we naturally plan ahead, and that's not inherently wrong. In fact, it is wise. In Proverbs 24:27, it says, "Put your outdoor works in order and get your fields ready. After that, build your house." No one would understand. Naturally, our instincts may want us, we may want to build a house first, because that brings immediate comfort. But Proverbs tells us, no, you got to get your priorities right. Plant your field, because if you miss the planting season, there's no harvest. That's the more pressing need. Nothing wrong with planning and due diligence, but all of our planning cannot replace God's provision. That's one of the lessons of the Tower of Babel, the belief that human effort can reach heaven without God. So the question becomes, can I be diligent and still depend on God? Can I work hard, plan wisely, and still live with open hand? Verse 12, and forgive us our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. I'll use Micah 6 to illustrate this point. He has shown you, O mortal, what is good and what does the Lord require of you, to act justly and to love mercy and to walk humbly with your God. So according to Micah, three things we need to do, and three things only, to be right with God. To act justly, to love mercy, and to walk humbly with God. Justice and fairness comes first. They are the overarching structure to govern our daily lives. Without them, everything falls into chaos. But we can't just stop there. If justice alone governs what we do, what happens if we mess up? That's why justice should be paired with mercy and forgiveness. In the book of Jonah, we see this side of us who want only justice. I think he suffers from my Father in heaven attitude. See those people in Nineveh? They deserve it. God, you and me, let's destroy them. But through Jonah, God taught us something deeper. Yes, justice matters. But when people fail, and as we all do, just in different ways and at different times, God, as a loving Father, extends grace and offers a second chance. That is why forgiveness is so important in the Lord's Prayer. If we truly mean it when we pray, Your kingdom come, Your will be done, then we must reflect what He wants us to do, which is offer forgiveness. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. Matthew 6, 13. So what kind of temptation are we asking God to lead us away from when we ask Him? The early Christians noticed that there are some things that we all struggle with, and they call it the seven deadly sins: pride, greed, lust, envy, gluttony, wrath, and sloth. I'm not going to go into the details about each one of them, because we've all seen them, either in ourselves or seeing them in others, probably mostly in others. But I just want to highlight one of them: sloth. Now, sloth is not about this little guy. It's not about being slow or cuddly. It's about being lazy. The kind causes us to waste time and avoid responsibility. Take smartphones, for example. How easy it is to get sucked into scrolling on it and waste tons of time. There is a survey from a couple years ago. An adult, on average, we spend 5 hours on the device every day. So I have to learn to put my phone physically away so that I don't touch it, to help me fight the temptation. That's the sloth I'm talking about. The temptation to disengage from what truly matters. Deliver us from the evil one. As our hearts become aligned with God, we become more willing to let Him deliver us from the things that enslave us. So when the disciples asked Jesus, "Lord, teach us to pray," Jesus did not give them a formula for getting what they wanted. He gave them a pattern for aligning their hearts with His and with the Father. And I think that's the biggest lesson of the Lord's Prayer. So in conclusion, prayer is less about persuading God to adopt our agenda and more about surrendering ours to His. It is an opportunity to know Him, align our hearts with His, and trust our lives to His will. And that is then how we should pray. Before I finish it, I just want to go back to the aphorism we started. Work as if everything depends on you. Pray as if everything depends on God. After reflecting on the Lord's Prayer, if it was me, I'd probably change it to something like this. Align with God through prayers and deeds. Work hard, knowing He fills our need. This is how we should pray. Thank you.
Thank you, Alex. I invite everyone to stand. We'll sing our closing song. A thousand generations falling down in worship to sing the song of ages to the Lamb. And all who've gone before us and all who will believe will sing the song.